Welcome to the Drabblecast, episode Q Choir of Heavenly Angels. Not really, just a children's choir, sadly. But still, a children's choir in heaven. Tragically. Which is still better than hell. Comparatively. But I also don't know where they went after that bus crash, admittedly. Maybe nowhere at all. Possibly. Just the cold, empty void of eternal non-existence which soon awaits us all. Inevitably. They sound happy enough, though. But I also don't speak Latin, so who can say? I'm your host, by the way, Norm Sherman. And while I can't say with certainty what those children are trying to tell us from beyond the grave, I can tell you that I'm pretty happy about this particular episode. Because it's episode 500, and that's quite a landmark. I look back and think about how long I've been doing this, and how long some of you have been doing this with me, and it feels like quite the journey. Almost half my life. 18 years of strange-ass stories. That's how long porcupines live. Well, not always. I never would have guessed back then that we'd still be here doing this a whole porcupine later. Has a lot changed for you in the past 18 years? A lot's changed for me, and for Drabblecast. 18 years ago, we sounded like this.
The creature's head lolled to the side. Blood and saliva ran from its mouth and thickly cascaded to the tile floor. No. No. Not me.
And here we are. If anything, life comes down to learning little by little how to be less and less shitty. But you know what hasn't changed throughout the years? If you've been listening to this podcast as long as I've been making it, the kinds of stories you and I have always loved. The ones they don't have a section for at Barnes & Noble, but have always had a home here on Drabblecast. If you and I have one thing in common, it's that we've never wanted to live in a world where clowns didn't lay eggs, and mole men didn't live under Jersey Mike's. And thank Bokrug we found a way that we didn't have to, because there are writers out there who are weird as fuck, just like us, some of them unsettlingly weirder, and they give us those worlds we're looking to live, or at least hear about, from a healthy distance sometimes. So here's to learning little by little how to be less and less shitty, and to at least one more healthy porcupine of weird stories, starting with this one. Our story this week is a special one we commissioned for just this occasion by an author who fans requested in the Drabblecast Patreon community several months ago when I asked, hey, who would you guys like to see a new story from for episode 500? And so it came to pass that a Shannon Garrity was queried, and verily, from our beseechment, a Shannon Garrity agreed. And it's great. You're gonna love it. It's called Your Local Repairers of Reality. Shannon's stories have appeared on the Drabblecast before, and I swear it feels like this woman just can't miss. Her past offerings on the podcast include Flying on My Hatred for My Neighbor's Dog, Two Whatever, and my personal favorite, I think, The Best Scarlet Ceremony Ever. But they're all great. It's like trying to pick your favorite organ. Honestly, you just want to keep them all if you can. Shannon's a writer, artist, and cartoonist, best known as the creator of Narbonic and Girl Genius. Other than the Drabblecast, her fictions appeared on Strange Horizons, Lightspeed, Escape Pod, and Funny Science Fiction Anthologies. So without further ado, we bring you Your Local Repairers of Reality by Shannon Garrity. When Oreos came out in Red Bull flavor, JoJo decided it was time to take action. There were bigger problems in the world, obviously, but that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Yes, that was how she would explain it to people. It's the straw that broke the camel's back, she told Philia over Indian takeout. So what are you going to do about it? Said Philia. Write to the Oreo company? Or the Red Bull company? Tell them to stop combining their products into weird flavors? You could organize people, get a campaign going. You think they'd listen? No. Philia picked onions out of her palak paneer. But it might be educational. Philia taught fourth grade. Every year she made her students write to their congressperson about an issue that mattered to them. Most kids picked the environment, or world peace. Once, a kid picked Bigfoot research. Philia didn't care what the issue was, as long as her kids learned to advocate for it. But she expected a little more of her wife, because she added, there are bigger problems in the world. Well, obviously. I mean, it's not even really a problem, you can just not eat Oreos. That's not the point. The point is, it's wrong, somehow. In a correctly functioning universe, Red Bull Oreos wouldn't exist. You need a purpose, said Philia. Which was true. Philia's job filled her life with significance and left her too exhausted to think about Oreo flavors. But JoJo was on her third year at a design company that produced less and less design. What had started as a passably creative job had turned into a daily slog of explaining to management why the latest brief couldn't be filled by typing keywords into an AI, then explaining to creative why they had to fix the hallucinatory mess that the AI produced when management went ahead and did it anyway. "This town is full of people who think they know what other people ought to be doing," Philia continued. "Grab a flyer off a telephone pole and see where it leads." So JoJo did. The telephone pole was in front of what had been the only art supply store in town, Philia's go-to for colored pencils and stickers, before the rent went up and it became a permanently deserted building. Apparently, it was more profitable to keep the space empty. Probably a tax thing. JoJo didn't understand tax things. The pole was feathered with flyers, but the one that drew JoJo read, "Real things matter. Make things more real. Volunteers, welcome," with a number repeated on strips along the bottom. JoJo tore one off. She tapped the number into her phone, wondering as she did why she bothered to tear off a strip. She paused, unsure what to text. At last, she wrote, "I'd like more reality, please." The response came quickly. "Thursday, starting at 6. Same place." JoJo was already out of her depth. "What place? I'm new." "Same place you're at now, with the cat on the roof. There's a door around back." JoJo looked up. A big plaster cat, orange paint faded to parchment yellow, crouched grinning on the roof of the former art supply store. JoJo hadn't noticed it before. Another text followed. "Don't worry, we have snacks." A few hours later, when Philia was falling asleep on her lap over a saucy historical drama, JoJo's phone dinged one more time. "BYO booze/drugs. No smoking." And that was all until Thursday. There had once been a mural on the back wall of the former art supply store, but between wear, tear, and graffiti, it was impossible to guess what it had been. The door was a stainless steel security job. JoJo pushed on the handle and wasn't sure she was happy when it opened. Inside, in the sudden warmth, people worked on things that seemed to give off light. They mostly looked young. Well, college young. Or old. Well, retirement old. Not many of them looked in between like JoJo. The young and old had more volunteer time, she figured. No one greeted her. Everyone seemed too busy. At a card table, a few people stared at a clutter of objects. Another group was knitting black and silver blankets. One woman slowly and carefully painted a leaf red. Except where shelves had been pushed aside to make room for this work, the space looked about the same as it had when it was an art supply store. The same industrial shelves stood in rows. The walls were still spattered with paint. After picking her way around, JoJo found a table set with a bowl of oranges, a bucket of Trader Joe's alphabet cookies, a pitcher of iced tea, and a 12-pack of assorted craft beers. She set down the bottle of cheap red wine she'd brought. "Hey, are you busy? I need a partner to tear the mirrors." JoJo turned. It was one of the college young people, a girl with a wide mouth and a startling amount of hair. "I'm not busy," JoJo said. The girl led her to an area where sheets of glass had been set up on easels. "I'm Peanut," she said. "Is this your first time here?" JoJo nodded. "Okay, so I'll do the first marks. Sit there." JoJo sat in the indicated chair. Peanut took the standard artist's position behind an easel. She uncapped a blue magic marker and peered at JoJo through the glass. "Hold still. I mean, not totally still. You can still talk and stuff, but enough so I can trace you." Peanut began drawing lines on the glass, short lines and swooping lines. After a while, JoJo said, "Sorry, what are you doing?" "Have you ever looked in a mirror and thought you looked wrong? Not like yourself?" "Well, yes. I suppose it's because of the light, or because I'm getting old." "Have you ever looked in a mirror and seen something move that shouldn't be moving?" "Yes, but that's just a trick of the..." "Have you ever looked in two mirrors, reflecting off each other, and in one of the reflections way in the back, there was a hooded figure or something, kind of like a raccoon?" "No? Well, all those things are caused by reflections going off bias. It's natural for them to get a little disjointed over time, but these days, you know..." Peanut added another mark to the glass. "Well, this is a simple way to anchor your image, so your reflection stays you. What made you come here?" JoJo grabbed onto the part of the conversation that made sense. "Red Bull Oreos." Peanut thought about it. Yeah, they're not very real, are they? How'd you get involved?" "Okay, so I was a cam girl. You know what that is?" I'm not that old, and into girls, Jojo didn't add. The site I was on didn't allow full nudity, so it was pretty tame, just lolling around in lingerie to put myself through college. The classic American story, right? Then the algorithm changed to block overtly sexy stuff from showing at the top of the feed, so suddenly lingerie was a liability. But here's the thing, swimwear wasn't. You see where this is going? I think so. Just like that, all the cam girls switched from underwear to bikinis. Same amount of skin, no too sexy penalty, until the algorithm caught up. The new rule was, swimwear only made it through if it was worn in a pool. So you all got in pools? Waiting pools, yeah. We were all sitting in empty waiting pools squeezing our tits. Then the algorithm figured that out and added that there had to be visible water. And it was then, trying to do a burlesque show in a door of the Explorer waiting pool while holding a pitcher of water, that I had a revelation. What was the revelation? That this was stupid. Peanut licked her thumb and wiped a line of ink from the glass. More to the point, it wasn't real. I wasn't a person anymore. I was like a robot or an alien trying to act like a person from incomplete information. I was a thing the algorithm burped up. What even was the algorithm? Who came up with this? That was when I realized reality was breaking down. So you stopped being a cam girl? No, I found a channel where I could take my clothes off for money like a decent person. You ever stripped? Jojo snorted with laughter. I was never the right shape for that. You'd be surprised. The thing is, I think sex work makes you more real. But people will get freaked out and try to make you less real for doing it. You gotta be careful. I think I've got your image pretty well anchored. See what you think. Jojo got up and walked around the easel, even though she could see through the glass. Peanut had traced a pattern from her shape. It didn't look like a human figure, but somehow it looked like Jojo. Now do me, said Peanut. Next Thursday, Jojo named the nameless mushrooms.
New fungi are discovered all the time, said Conrad, one of the chatty seniors sitting around what had once been the store checkout counter.
They'd opened Jojo's cheap wine and were in a merry mood.
They're given scientific names, but that's not the same as being called something.
Ty, enthroned in a weedy armchair, held up a photo. Kieran's footprints. What do you think?
If we remember it, it's a good one, said Conrad.
Jojo sifted through the pictures. Some were photos or printouts. Others had been cut from magazines. There were a few slides. She held a slide up to one eye. This one's fuzzy and brown. Teddy bear? Cappuccino?
Cappuccinos and capuchin monkeys, said a tiny old woman perched on a stool, are both named after the capuchin friars due to their coffee-colored hooded robes.
She smiled beatifically and returned to staring at a large picture of an unsettlingly phallic mushroom.
You see, said Conrad, one name links a monk, a monkey, and my afternoon coffee. If we find right names, we plant deep roots. This is groundwork.
Teddy bear's table, said Jojo. I like that, said Ty. It didn't really make sense, though. Jojo squinted through the slide again. Teddy bears are fuzzy and brown. They wouldn't have fuzzy brown tables.
Names don't have to make sense. Does your name make sense?
No. Ty held up a photo. What about this one? Is that really a mushroom? It's jet black. Striking, isn't it? Black outside, white inside. What should its name be?
Not Oreo, Jojo thought.
Dragon mallow?
A distinct possibility, said Conrad.
What's the point of coming up with these names, said Jojo, if we're the only ones who are going to know them? Tell people, said Ty.
Make them memorable, said the little old lady.
If they're true names, said Conrad, the mushrooms will know.
Do I have something on my face? Said Philia. No, said Jojo. I'm just looking at you, seeing your lines.
Getting old and wrinkly, huh?
Not that. It's like your silhouette, sort of. It's something we do at the art store. I don't understand anything you tell me about that place.
Me neither. But do you ever feel like the world around us is getting more fake somehow?
What do you do to get a grip on reality?
I assign construction paper collages. Few things are as real as construction paper.
Jojo spent a few Thursdays with the naming crew. Then Jamal, who carried an air of authority for someone who looked maybe 16, asked to borrow her for the crew that remembered days. You take a day, he explained, squatting in a pile of deaccessioned library books, and find one memorable thing about it.
Just one?
That's all it takes to prove that day existed. An old man with a stormy gray afro handed Jamal an index card. He glanced at it, nodded, and filed it in a tin box. Here. He gave Jojo a card from another box. On it was typed, December 28th, 1879. I just have to find something that happened on this day? That's right. Jojo picked through the books. Many were old encyclopedias and almanacs, the kind that had been common when she was a kid, but weren't seen anymore outside of library reference rooms, if there. There were history books, sort of. Notes on the origin of petroleum in Russia, records of the beefsteak and chowder club, Bangladeshi branch, 1870-1879, footprints in Fresno, an ambulator's account, sewing machines, their first 100 years. We could do this faster on the internet, said Jojo. You don't want to go fast, said a woman sitting on a pile of encyclopedias, poring over the story of the Akron-Canton Airport. If you take your time, you'll remember. Besides, the internet's been losing reality. You can't get reliable history there anymore. What happens if a day gets forgotten? We lose the history on that day? That, sure, but besides that, history gets less real. You feel it, don't you? The past seems wiggly, causes disconnected from effects. Remembering helps fix that? Lots of things help. Are you one of the ones who came here because you're a helper, or because you feel helpless? Jojo's gut twitched. Helpless. I think my wife's a helper. The woman nodded. I was in your boat. I'm a clerk at Walgreens, she added, as if this explained volumes. I'm not sure what I'd do anymore. Well, today I freed the toothpaste. The toothpaste? They lock the toothpaste up in one of those plexiglass jails. Half the stock is under lock and key now. And, you know, a customer has to buzz for us and we come in and open the jail and let the shampoo or the multivitamins or what have you out. Yeah, I've had to do that. Shopping, I mean. I'm not a clerk. Today, they locked up the toothpaste, and I thought, this isn't real. Or if it is, reality's gotten out of whack. So during my shift, I unlocked the plexiglass door and let people pick out their own toothpaste if they darn well wanted. She stabbed the book with a finger. The day Kakai entered Samanti. Does anyone have a pen? Jommel handed her a pen. Good find, Mabry. What are you doing, Jojo? Still looking. Don't despair. The 19th century was busy. No, wait. Jojo's heart skipped a beat. Something she didn't think hearts did, and certainly not while reading a book entitled Great British Railway Disasters. On December 28th, 1879, the Tay Rail Bridge in Scotland collapsed, killing 75 people. It's the fifth deadliest train accident in British history. That part might be out of date. It's an old book. You can leave that out, said Jommel. Just jot down a sentence or two about the bridge collapse. A man named William McGonagall wrote a poem about it that some people consider the worst poem ever written. Jojo read for a while, stifled a laugh, kept reading. Sorry, people died, but listen. The storm fiend did loudly bray, because 99 lives had been taken away, on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. That's amazing, said a girl digging through encyclopedias nearby. I thought it was 75 lives, said Mabry. I suppose he was as good at math as he was at poetry. Jojo smiled down at the book. More people need to know about this. I want to know if it's still the worst poem, or if someone else has written a worse one. This is why we do the work, said Jommel. Tomorrow, said Mabry, I'm going to open up all the merchandise jails. You'll get fired. Oh, I've been fired before. I'll be fired again. At least getting fired is real. At work, midway through an explanation of why the company's AI couldn't generate accurate wall art maps from no data, Jojo said, No, this is no good. Well, that's what we've been discussing, said the executive in charge of project rollout. I mean, this whole project is no good. It's not real. I was doing real work when I started, but at some point it turned into this. Oh, don't get existential on me, said the exec. This needs to be resolved by the end of the day, Friday. No, it doesn't. Nobody needs this. Nobody needs a website to generate a map of their vacation with branded icons at each site they visited, then sell it to them as a framed print. If they really want a map, they can make it themselves, which, by the way, is more than the AI can do. The exec's lip twitched. There's been an impression for a while that you're no longer fully engaged with our mission. Not fully, no. Well, there may be another workplace environment for you which you'd be a better fit. Maybe. Is there any chance you can get the map thing resolved before you go? Nope, it's literally impossible. The exec sighed. Oh well, at least I can blame it on you on your way out. Getting fired was real. Unfortunately, paychecks were also real, and suddenly Jojo didn't have any.
In a perfect world, a family of four could live on a teacher's salary, said Philia. But we live in a fallen world and can't support two women and a fern. That's what I've been trying to tell you, said Jojo. Reality is set up all wrong. I'm not disagreeing, but we still have to live in it. Jojo braced herself for a future salty with ramen dinners. There may be an opening at Walgreens. The art store was overrun with chickens. Someone had set up a pen for them, but they kept getting out. Watch out for their poops, said Ty. They're bigger than you'd expect. Why are there chickens? Said Jojo. Never mind, why do I ask why there's anything? Peanut was checking her phone. The weather reporters in Vacaville are telling us to shore up the levees. Is that weather with an H and no A? I know, it's corny. What's a reality storm? Jojo asked. Well, they come in all shapes and sizes, said Ty. Some happen naturally, some are deliberately started by our opposite numbers. Our what? The group's making things less real. You didn't think Red Bull Oreos happened on their own, did you? I think you should catch that chicken. Jojo scooped up a speckled hen that was strutting by, innocent of the world, or she tried to scoop it up. In a breath, the chicken wasn't where it had been. It scooted and darted, stopped and started, burbled the whole time. After a long and embarrassing chase, Jojo worked out a method of coming at it without looking like a hawk about to swoop. The chicken settled down as soon as she picked it up. It was softer than it looked. Jojo found Ty talking to the knitting team. What do you want with it? With what? The chicken. Jojo jiggled it in her arms. It went, burk! Put it in the pen, I guess. It's not for me, it's for you. For me? For centering. Chickens are extremely real. The knitters nodded. They were piecing something together that looked like a star chart knitted into an enormous afghan. Ty, there's something I've been wondering. Mm-hmm? Who runs this? This cell, or this whole operation? Either one. Nobody. Nobody? Or everybody. Yeah, let's say everybody. Yeah, okay, it's a collective. But who organizes it? Who came up with these activities? Different people. We figure out things that work and pass them along. But who answered my text when I joined? I don't know. Probably Peanut. She's always on her phone. Peanut? Peanut walked by, working a cat's cradle. Yeah? Did you send Jojo the welcome text? I sent her three welcome texts. I forgot to tell her about the snacks, and then I forgot to tell her about the booze and drugs. Jojo didn't want to ask the next question. Ty, are we doing anything here, or are we just a bunch of crazy people? I've thought about that, said Ty, and I have two answers. Which one do you want? Both? Smart. Answer one. It's better to do anything, no matter how mad, that adds beauty and kindness and meaning to the world, than to give in to apathy and despair. And two? We'll find out how real all this is when the storm hits. On Wednesday morning, as she scrolled through sad job listings, Jojo got a text. High noon. Be with the realest thing you've got. Practice what you've learned. Is this Peanut? Jojo texted, but there was no answer. She checked the time. 11:30. She called Philia. Can I meet you for lunch? Why? Reality storm. A pause. It should be all right. The staff knows you, but I'm on cafeteria duty. Philia had taken their car to work, so Jojo biked to the school. She watched reflections in store windows flicker by. She passed clusters of mushrooms and called out their names. She parked her bike and signed in at the office. 11:50. She could feel a chaotic energy building, but maybe that was just elementary school. Down in the cafeteria, Philia had made her a tray. You lucked out. It's nacho day. Care to explain what's going on? I don't know. If it's gonna happen, it'll happen in about 5 minutes. Philia picked at her nachos. How real were nachos? The chips were pretty real, but she wasn't sure about the cheese. A shout went up. Kids were running, knocking over chairs. Philia was up in an instant, striding after them. Some kids were pooling around the cafeteria windows, while others ran straight at the door. Jojo craned her neck over the diminutive crowd. The soccer field had been invaded by chickens. She went outside. The soccer field was beyond redemption. Kids were chasing chickens. Kids were chasing kids. Chickens were relishing freedom. The laughter and squawks mixed with the honking of car horns in the street, where Ty and the knitters were holding up traffic with a display of their knitted celestial map. Ty was holding an astrolabe and directing its position. Philia clapped a hand on Jojo's shoulder. Jojo, are you a part of this? No. Well, yes, but I didn't know they do it. Or at least, I didn't know they do it here. Oh no, I have to do something too. And the reality storm hit.
Nothing changed. Everything changed. Were colors dimmer? Were shapes flatter? Was there a plastic taste in Jojo's mouth? For a moment, the school was gone, had been gone for years and replaced by nothing. Then it was a highway. What were they doing standing in a highway? And then there had been a war. Something really is happening, isn't it? Said Philia. Jojo took Philia's hand. That helped. She took a breath. That helped too. But then there was a moment when nothing meant anything. Not the chickens and not the stars. The school had no history and the chickens had no names. And Jojo knew she wouldn't like whatever was coming to inhabit that nothing. She took another breath and shouted as loudly as she could.
Beautiful railway bridge of the Silvery Tay. Alas, I am very sorry to say that 90 lives have been taken away on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time.
Philia squeezed her hand. She remembered all the other people working to give the universe meaning. She reached out with her free hand, touching the foundation of reality, and gave it a little spackle. Then, color returned, and kids were chasing chickens. Help me clean this up, said Philia. The next day was Thursday. Jojo went to the former art supply store, but it wasn't an abandoned building anymore. Of course it wasn't. Why would a landlord leave a space like that empty? It was an art gallery, and it was open late for a reception. Jojo went in, drank cheap wine, and examined a sculpture of an unsettlingly phallic mushroom. We always showcase local artists, said a woman in whitewashed spattered jeans. In this show, all the art is of native plants and fungi. This one's called Grandmother's Dildo. Don't look at me, I didn't name it. I know you didn't, said Jojo. Tell me, does this gallery need a director? We're a small operation. We already have one. We could use an assistant director, though. Jojo looked for Peanut and Ty and Jommel and the rest of the group. She visited all the Walgreens in the area, but she didn't see them. Maybe they'd moved on to another place where reality needed shoring up. Or maybe she wasn't looking in the right places. At Walgreens, she noticed that Red Bull Oreos were gone, but pumpkin spice had been added to Slim Jims, so reality wasn't entirely safe. For a while, she was too busy at the gallery to think much about it. She painted and matted and framed, and she usually worked the closing shift. She got to know a lot of artists. She started sketching for the first time in years. One evening, sitting at the front counter alone, she found herself staring at a fresh sheet of paper. She didn't want to sketch. She needed to do something else. She selected a magic marker. Real things matter. Make things more real. Volunteers, welcome. And that was our story. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, and you love the Travelcast, and you want to help celebrate 500 episodes with us, consider donating or subscribing to our Patreon at patreon.com/travelcast. Keep us going strong. We appreciate it. And special thanks to our episode artist this week, Travelcast art director Bo Kier. He really threw his heart into this one, and you can tell. It's awesome. Great job, Bo. Remember, the Travelcast is brought to you with a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, which means don't change it, don't sell it, but feel free to tell a friend, or write us a review. Spread the weird. Our program this week was brought to you by Nicole Leitner, Bo Kier, Tom Baker, Jossie Gerwig, Sean Gentry, Wyatt Scott, Joe Pietras, that sweet riff from the song In the Meantime by the band Space Hog, Bart Epstein, Piper Lauderdale, Anna Rose, Maria Lovett, Timaeus Bloom, Lucas Stroff, and yours truly, Norm Sherman, reminding you of the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time.